Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the latest edition of Blog Talk Radio on City of Champions Radio. I'm Matt Geica talking Pittsburgh sports, and we have some interesting and unique content coming your way this week. A bit of a late start on City of Champions Radio as we get her going on a Thursday, but at the same time, excited to bring you some coverage of something we haven't really talked about at all on City of Champions or on our various multimedia platforms, and that is the Women's World Cup. And as you may know, if you've been paying attention, Pittsburgh has a little extra stake, some extra skin in the game this World Cup, as Pine Richland grad and Gibsonia native Megan Klingenberg is a big contributor on Team USA as it goes for its first World Cup championship since 1999 and playing not too far away, just north of the border in Canada. So we'll get to that in just a moment, but for now I want to thank everyone who clicked and downloaded or just listened to via the embedded player last week's podcast with Josh Yoey of DK on PittsburghSports.com, one of my colleagues at that site. He's doing a wonderful job so far, so we appreciate him joining us to talk all things Pittsburgh sports, especially the Pirates and the Penguins last week. But for now, I want to bring aboard our featured guest coming to us from the nation of Canada. He covers the Houston Dash of the Women's Professional Soccer League, National Women's Soccer League, I should say, and that is where Megan Klingenberg plays outside of international competition, and he is in Canada to take in the Women's World Cup. And not just Team USA, but the full scope. His name is Hal Kaiser. Hal, how are you doing today?
Great, Matt. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be here.
You made quite the trip coming up from Texas to, I believe I saw your last entry on Keeper Notes, where you cover the Dash and other women's soccer issues. You are a little bit further east than I thought you might be, correct?
That's right, yeah. We drove up to Montreal. There's games in both Ottawa and Montreal, which are about 2 hours apart from one another, so it was a good spot to make as a home base and sort of move back and forth between those cities. And then we'll also fly to Moncton tomorrow to take in the Group F matches there involving England, France, Colombia, and Mexico.
So let's talk about your role with Keeper Notes, first of all. I got to know you last year when you were writing for a fan-sided site, and, of course, City of Champions, part of the fan-sided network. The Pittsburgh Riverhounds of the USL, who we continue to cover, were affiliated with the Houston Dynamo of MLS last season, so that's how we got connected, at least via Twitter. And but now you're off on Keeper Notes and covering the Dash, and just let the listeners know exactly what your responsibilities and what your beat is for that site.
Sure, yeah, like you say, Keeper Notes is really predominantly it's Houston focused. Keeper Notes has a Sunday morning radio show on Yahoo Sports Radio AM 1560, but the keeper is a woman named Jen Cooper who's been heavily involved in women's soccer over the years and had a women's soccer podcast as well, which now has come under the Howler magazine label, so it's called the Mix Zone, and it's you can get it through Howler magazine. But yeah, I came across. Gosh, it's been probably about since March, I want to say, and I'm in the radio show rotation. So once every month or so, once every two or three weeks, actually, it's turned out to be more recently. We talk Houston Dynamo, we talk Houston Dash, we get into the national team issues, a little bit of Liga MX, which of course is popular down in Houston given the demographics. And then from a print standpoint, I'm basically a beat reporter for the Houston Dash. I'm out there at practice probably 2-3 times a week, cover the games, write about the players, do interviews, that sort of thing.
So yeah, first of all, I want to thank the Houston Dynamo for Anthony Arena because he has been quite good for the Riverhounds this year. But yes, good to know about all that's going on down there. And yeah, very interesting about the Mexican League drawing interest. But I suppose, as you say, with the demographics the way they are, it makes a lot of sense for your site to cover that too. So good to hear that things are going well down there. Tell me about Megan Klingenberg. I know that the Women's World Cup is definitely moving the needle more than usual here in Pittsburgh because we have one of our own competing, and not just on the team, but a big part of the team as an outside back, and we saw her get upfield several times, against Australia in the opening match a couple of days ago. What have you seen from her that you like, and what has made her such a successful player on the international stage?
Yeah, she's really been great. I mean, she came to the Dash last year from Tyresö in Sweden, where she'd been playing for a bit. And she was actually sort of a mid-season addition. We got her at the start of the season, but she had to finish out her contract with Tyresö. And when she arrived in the U.S., there was a little bit of an adjustment period because the speed of the game is different between Europe and the U.S. So she struggled a bit, let's say, for half of that second half of the season where she was here. And at that point, she really was sort of a rotation player for the U.S. By no stretch of the imagination would you have thought that she would be a starter going into the World Cup at that point. And she really, towards the end of the season, the NWSL season, came on very strong and then had a great offseason with the World Cup qualifying, where she scored that absolute so against Haiti and became a regular starter. And it's really been great to see. And what I like about her specifically is she defends well, but she really adds quite a lot to the attack. As you noted, she gets forward. She's got enough pace to track back when she needs to. And the way the U.S. have played, it's been such a narrow formation through the midfield that they really rely heavily on those fullbacks for width and to get the ball into the box. And she's been great for that. I think the way that Ellis, you can say what you want about Jill Ellis, the U.S. head coach, and how she has a team playing, but in terms of how it benefits Megan Klingenberg, it benefits her perfectly. She's the perfect left back to fit into that formation, the way that she can get forward and contribute on the attacking end.
Yes, not having watched as many women's Team USA women's games recently as I would have liked to, it was nice to see that the system they're playing does feature Megan Klingenberg. So we look forward to more of that as Team USA takes on Sweden and former coach Pia Sundhage. That will be Friday, and the U.S. in the so-called group of death, I guess, that has been one of the labels put on it with Nigeria, with Sweden. Those two teams played a 3-3 draw the other day that was highly entertaining. But let's just discuss Team USA in general and your evaluations of that opening match. I know you watched it from afar, but still, a 3-1 win, but the team did not look very sharp in the first half and maybe even into the second half a little bit before they wore down the Australians. How do you see that one fitting into the grand scheme of things? Was there enough good for you to feel positive about the way this team is rounding into form here?
That's a good question. I mean, looking at this team, if you look back over the course of this year, they tend to be a very different team when Megan Rapinoe is on the pitch than when she's off. And, you know, if you look at that game, it's no coincidence that all three goals came from the left side. Two of them came through her. They really, when she's not out there, they really lack width completely through the midfield, become far too central, too easy for teams to disrupt by playing compact defensively. And, you know, it just hasn't been pretty. I think, you know, there's so much with this team, there's so much over their heads right now about we have to win, we have to win. It's been so long. You have Abby Wambach. This is her last World Cup. She hasn't won one yet. She wants to win one badly. I'm sure she's putting a lot of pressure on the team internally. And they just looked kind of, to me, they looked a little bit nervous, overwhelmed by that early on. I think what you get with the U.S., though, relative to every other team out there, or most of the other teams out there, I should say, let me step back. This is probably the most competitive World Cup that we've seen in terms of how women's football has developed across the globe over the years, and it's exciting to see that. But what the U.S. still has is they have depth, and they're a very fit team. And so when you're going up against the likes of Australia, you expect that, you know, those last 20, 30 minutes are going to belong to the U.S. You look at you mentioned Nigeria. Nigeria had a phenomenal game against Sweden, surprised everybody. But they don't go much deeper than maybe 13, 14 players. So when you get to the third game in 10 days, and that's when the U.S. will play them, is in that third game of the group, the U.S. can pull out players from the 18th, 19th, 20th spot on the roster who could be starters on any team in the World Cup. Nigeria now has a bunch of players who are really tired, and it becomes much more difficult for them to compete. So a lot of people have had a lot of angst about the U.S. in the run-up to this tournament. I have a little less angst just because there's so many games in a compressed period of time that I think it benefits the U.S. And the U.S. just has a tendency of showing up when it comes to the World Cup and gutting it out and at least getting to sort of the semifinal stage. And I think that's what you probably see here as well.
It does appear from many of the evaluations I read and I heard before the tournament that the U.S. is still considered somewhat of a co-favorite, but do you believe that is feasible to have those types of expectations? And you just discussed internal expectations, and maybe with Abby Wambach, her last hurrah, probably Hope Solo's last Women's World Cup, hard to tell, but that's a possibility too. So as it always is in these types of tournaments that happen 4 years apart, you're going to have players moving in and moving out from the last time and on into the future. But can the U.S. still be considered a team that we can expect to get to that semifinal stage, like you just talked about, considering how much the world has caught up in a lot of ways?
I think it really sort of depends on whether they win the group or not. With the way that the draw came out is whoever wins Group D has a pretty easy path to the semifinals, whereas the second-place team has a much rougher go of it. So it's really important that they win that group, and then they're pretty well positioned. You contrast that with Germany and France, for example, who, if you were to ask me who are the favorites, who do I think is going to win the World Cup, before I ever said the U.S., I would say Germany and France. If they win their groups, they play each other in the quarterfinals, which is a bit of a shame that you have one of those teams get knocked out at that stage. So the draw has been fortunate to the U.S., but it's really important that they need to put Sweden away this weekend and make sure that Sweden can't catch them. I'm not that concerned about Nigeria. So if they handle Sweden, then I think they win the group, and then I think it looks pretty good for them to get to the semifinals. If they finish second, I think it'll be a much tougher go of it. But again, it comes down to depth. Relative to the Men's World Cup, the women play an equal number of matches, almost an equal number of matches. There's one more round in the men's side than there is on the women's side because of 32 teams versus 24. But over a much more compressed period of time, the tournament only lasts a month, and it's by the middle of next week, the first round's over. Mm-hmm. So that depth really tells compared to most of the other teams out there.
Joining us from north of the border today on City of Champions Radio is Hal Kaiser of Keeper Notes, filling us in on Pittsburgh's Megan Klingenberg and the U.S. national team competing in the Women's World Cup in Canada, across Canada, in fact. And I want to touch on something you wrote in your first entry for your World Cup journal on keepernotes.com, discussing how Canada is embracing the World Cup. And you just saw Montreal, and I think a big city like that, this type of event, even with its world scope, can get lost. And it seems like from your evaluation that it did, and maybe not the best venue as well in Olympic Stadium, which resembles a cavern, I think, if there aren't enough people in there. But also the games out in Winnipeg, I thought, had some good energy, a smaller facility there. So how would you sum up Canada as a World Cup host? I know we're very early on, but how do you see this one, I guess, being embraced by the Canadians and the folks who have made the trip up there like you have?
I'll have to see some more venues. I'm going to Ottawa today. Ottawa's had pretty good attendance, and I hear that the vibe there is pretty good. So we'll see what things are like there. I mean, out west, like you mentioned, the attendance has been pretty strong. Several of the Canadian players play for the Houston Dash. So Erin McLeod, for example, the goalkeeper, I talked to her last month about what the vibe is like in the warm-up and the lead-up to the tournament. And they were based in Vancouver at the time, and she said it's phenomenal. Everybody's really excited. So I think in talking to other people who've visited these venues on the west side, I think the vibe there is good. Montreal, like you said, it's just such a big city, and soccer is not necessarily the main thing here in Montreal. And it just seems to have gotten lost here. I mean, you see signs of it here and there. You see banners for Women's World Cup. You see advertisements. But walking around town, apart from the occasional person wearing a U.S. jersey, actually, and not so much Canadian jerseys, you really wouldn't even know that it's going on. And that the games this week. week were so sparsely attended, only 10,000 in that giant stadium. It's a terrible stadium to begin with anyway. it's a shame that they have to play this tournament on turf, because Stade Saputo would have been a much better location to hold the games. It was almost, Olympic Stadium is almost depressing. You can be in a really good mood going into that stadium to watch a game and come out just depressed, no matter what the quality of the ball is, because it's like a prison. I mean, it's just terrible. I think every other stadium around the world that was built at that period of time is no longer being used. Only, or at least in this part of the world, is no longer being used. Only the Olympic Stadium in Montreal is still in use.
Yes, we had one of those from the 70s in Three Rivers Stadium here in Pittsburgh for a while, but that was demolished in 2001. So, yeah, it's been a while since still a vibrant part.
We have the Astrodome in Houston, but it's just sitting there collecting dust. Nobody's actually using it for anything.
Yeah, the Astrodome, even older than Three Rivers and I think Olympic Stadium, that goes back at least a decade more. But last thing for you, and let's talk about your current hometown of Houston and the Dash and just the soccer community down there. The Women's Professional League, this latest iteration of women's pro soccer in America, just a couple of years old, it was established in 2013. What gives you the confidence that this league and locally the Dash in Houston are going to be able to succeed long term?
I think the league really did a good job at looking at why the first two iterations did not work, and they've taken those lessons and they've applied them here. And one of those things is what's really key is the involvement of U.S. soccer. U.S. soccer is carrying the cost of the national team players. That can't go on for forever, but U.S. soccer, it shows a clear investment in making sure that this league succeeds and survives. The Canadian and Mexican federations are doing that as well. I don't think that will last as long. It may not last past this year. But to be honest, the Mexican and Canadian national team players, there's very few of them who are starters or important players for their teams within NWSL. So that's one thing. The second thing is the partnership with, so far, MLS, but talking with the new commissioner, Jeff Plush, not long ago, he was talking about the possibility that NASL teams could become partners as well. But you look at Houston and Portland, two teams where the ownership is the same across MLS and NWSL, and therefore the facilities are already there. The facilities are top-notch. You don't have the issues that you have with some of these smaller independent teams who are forced to play well outside of their cities in less than ideal venues because of costs. And I think that's the model. If you look at the expansion teams coming down the road or the teams that will likely be added over the next couple of years, I think you're going to see MLS. I think you're going to see partnerships with other leagues or other teams rather than any more independent teams. There's maybe one independent team that could be set up, but we'll see. And then they've done a good job, I think, with the new commissioner hire, Jeff Plush. He has a lot of experience from the key years of MLS growth. He knows what's important for league survival, and he's very focused on getting sponsorship dollars in, getting TV deals done. There's been a few now high-profile sponsorship deals put in place, such as Coppertone has signed a deal with the league. There's a TV deal coming that hasn't been announced yet, but a TV deal should be coming pretty soon. I was hoping, the word is that it will probably be Fox, but that's hearsay. But I was hoping that could maybe get in place before the end of the World Cup, because then you have the obvious benefit of cross-advertising for the people who are watching the World Cup, being able to see that Fox is going to carry the league as well. And I think, you know, the quality of the product, there's more people getting out there and seeing it. I've seen comments from people who have not been fans at all, who are fans of the men's game, looking and saying, hey, this actually is, it's not the men's game, it's different, but it's different in a positive way. It's a little bit slower, which makes it a little bit more tactical and technical. And it's interesting soccer. I enjoy it. I've gotten to the point where I almost really, I love men's soccer as well, but in some respects, because I'm a bit of a tactical and technical geek, I enjoy the NWSL a bit more than I do MLS.
Definitely understood. It's two different brands of soccer, but both, I think, fun to watch for different reasons, and of course they share some of the same reasons too. But my guest today has been Hal Kaiser. He covers the Houston Dash for the National Women's Soccer League. That's where Megan Klingenberg, the Pine Richland grad, the Gibsonian native, and that's where she plays her pro ball, and she is up north in Canada with Team USA, and that's where Hal is. He'll be moving on to Ottawa here in just a little bit, but we thank him for joining us. Hal, we really appreciate it. We'll look for more of your stuff on keepernotes.com. Have a great experience there at the World Cup.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
That's Hal, and I'm Matt. This has been City of Champions Radio. We'll try to get you another episode here before the end of the week. Look for it at cityofchampionssports.com, part of the Fansided Network. Thank you again for tuning in. I'm Matt Geica, reminding you that when the radio fades, you know life's moving fast. Good soccer talk today. We'll move on to other subjects in the future on COC Radio.